Hi there, this is your host, Isaac. You know the show. The greatest conspiracy podcast ever. The Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast, of course. I've been talking to you about Marjorie Cameron teasing you, stringing you along for months. Because I completed a book by Spencer Kansa called Wormwood Star, The Magical Life of Marjorie Cameron. And I have prepared a little show for you, a little special. If you don't know who Marjorie Cameron is, I desire for you to stick around because you're going to learn a lot about this person, find out why she is important in this big Illuminati agenda of the occult. She's admired by many occultists, people who practice this left-hand path of antinomianism, and for good reason. She's done a little bit of everything. She is the 20th century Renaissance woman. And we're going to go into her entire story today because I prepared a show over the last few months. It's going to be the greatest Marjorie Cameron show you've ever heard. Is that enough hyping up of this thing or what? For months I've been telling you I'm going to do it. Today's the day. We're going to do it. I think I was a little trigger shy because there's a lot to go through. I'm going to try to get this done in one show. We're going to just roll with it because it's, you know, it's time for me and you to catch up here. I'm not going to rush this conversation, this discussion. Is it a conversation if it's one-sided? I don't know. But sometimes you hit me up on the socials, that counts. That's a discussion. That's a bilateral discussion. So, as always, if you do have questions, comments, jeers or cheers, hit me up on the socials. As long as I still have them. I want to delete them. I hate social media. I hate social media in all forms of it. I don't hate it entirely, but I hate what they do with your data and stuff because they're a business, right? Instagram and Facebook and all that, Twitter. They're all business, so they've got an agenda to keep the company profits flowing. So that's what I dislike about them. So I'd like to not support that system anymore, but it does keep me connected to you. So there's that. That makes it worth it. Now, before I go any further, I do want to give you a little background on Marjorie Cameron. Let's get into who this person is. Why aren't we even talking about her? She was born on April 23rd, 1922. Died at the age of 73 in 1995, by the way. If you want to put this into context a little bit. She maneuvered through her lifetime through a variety of experiences that connect her to this paranormal realm of the occult, aliens, UFOs, the military-industrial complex. That's right, she's a veteran. Thank you for your service, Marjorie Cameron. She was an actress, an artist, and of course, the Scarlet Woman of Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley's Thelemic Fantasies. Now, she's of concern, as of late, of interest, because she was on shows like CBS's Strange Angel, which is a series available on their, their online on-demand thing, All Access, I believe it's called, that goes through the life of Jack Parsons. She also appears on season 2 of Lore. And I believe she is on an episode of Drunk History, if I'm not mistaken. I know Jack Parsons was. My memory is not so good. I don't remember if she was on it or not. But she grew up in the Midwest in Belle Plaine, Iowa, in the heartland. And as a young girl, and by the way, let me time out. These notes come exclusively from Spencer Kansa's book. Kansa? Kansa? K-A-N-S-A. How would you pronounce that? You insert how you would pronounce that every time I say it, because I'm surely butchering the name, because that's what I do. But these notes come from this book. So, anything I say It's going to come from that book. So she grew up, and as a young girl in Iowa, she had supernatural visions. Like, here's a quote. "The ghostly procession of four white horses floating by her bedroom window." Which is reminiscent of Salem's Lot with the little vampire spirit children floating outside the window. But yeah, so she saw these four white horses. Obviously, that's a very apocalyptic sort of revelations kind of thing going on there. And then she also believed that there was a well in the backyard that was quite literally a hole to hell. Now, she was a young girl when she was kind of saying these things, which shows you that she had some kind of connection to the paranormal realm. Now, if you're familiar with the idea of young girls talking to spirits, it's very reminiscent of Joan of Arc, which will indeed come up later. She lived in a very repressive house. Was every house in the early 1900s repressive, oppressive? I feel like every home in the 1920s was some strict Baptist upbringing or something, but apparently this was her home as well. And she was caught pleasuring herself at the age of 9. And the punishment for that was being beaten by her own father and sent to bed without food by her mother. Was that a punishment? She got caught, sent her back to bed. Anyways, I don't know. Bad joke. But yeah, so like that just goes to show like she had a very Aleister Crowleyan sort of upbringing with this idea of an oppressive Christian household. She became pregnant at the age of 15 and was forced to have a home abortion by her mother, which is very curious, right? Because the pro-life argument must have wavered depending upon the context of the situation back then. In the 1940s, she became an adult, obviously. And this is where she goes into the military-industrial complex. She joined the Navy in a women's, I forgot the notes. It was called WAVES. It was a Navy reservist system for females at the time. And she did very well. She was deployed on a covert mission that, quote, to this day, raises more questions than it answers. Details remain sketchy. But while working for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marjorie claimed she was used as bait in a shadowy honey trap. Now, there's not a lot of information about what this was. But the honey trap, obviously, this is talking about something similar to what we saw with the film with Jennifer Lawrence. You know what it's called? Red Sparrow. She was in Red Sparrow, and it was a similar plot line. And when you look into the Illuminati conspiracy theories, you'll see mention of this sort of concept of mind-controlling women to being sexual slaves for the purpose of serving the higher state. This is sometimes called the diamond programming, which you see with Marilyn Monroe, when she was wearing the diamonds. They claimed she had some kind of mind-control-esque stuff. See my Century of the Self episodes 1, 2, and 3. Talked about her in, I believe it was episode 3. But anyways, in the Navy, she was sent to be a makeup artist and do wardrobe for military propaganda films. Now, this was after she had worked her way up in rank and sort of proven herself. You know, she was already working for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is a pretty high up position, right? So then she was sent to be a makeup artist and do wardrobes for military propaganda films. Which we all know, like, Disney had a hand in that back then, back in the 1940s. But the military, the propaganda films, that whole concept comes from our buddy, Eddie Bernays. Again, I did 3 shows called Century of the Self back in the summer of 2018. you've got to listen to it. Kanye West talks about Edward Bernays and all the deception that is rampant in the world today and how he was sort of the godfather of it. So, how curious that she would get connected into Hollywood at this point, because, as we'll get into, she would find her place as an actress in doing occult films with Kenneth Anger. There was also something curious in the book. William Burroughs, of course, always comes up when you're researching the occult, wrote something in response to Oppenheimer's little boy atomic bomb from the Second World War, of course, in the 1940s. And the quote is, "Scientists always said there was no such thing as a soul. Now they are in a position to prove it." Now, here's where I believe the occultists get it right. I think there's a lot of danger with the new religion of our world today, which is, of course, science. These scientists are atheists. Not all of them. But the logic of, I don't know, reductionism or whatever you want to call it, is the idea that we're just kind of like mechanical products of evolution. I'd like to think we've got a higher purpose than that. I think we've got these souls that were given to us by our creator. And the occultists, they are not atheists. Now, when you talk about the Illuminati, that big umbrella, which we're still arguing about who is in that group and what their aims are, sometimes you'll see the atheists show up. But generally, the occultists, they're a bit spiritual. They're not Christian, necessarily. But at least they believe there's something beyond this realm, beyond this dimension that we exist in with our five senses. Because I'm not like a climate change denier. I also don't think that science is entirely wrong. I mean, it's a tool, right? It's a tool, and sometimes people get it right and sometimes they get it wrong. But the scientists, you'll notice, they change their opinion when science is supposed to be concrete. It's supposed to be definitive, using the scientific method, yet things change all the time. Is milk good for you or is it bad for you? Nobody knows. You can find studies proving anything or disproving anything. I'm just saying that science can be a little wishy-washy when, in fact, the definition of it is supposed to not be that way. So, Marjorie Cameron, she goes AWOL, that's absent without leave, and she goes back to her home in Iowa to see her brother. And as a result, she gets court-martialed and stuck in the barracks, yet somehow she gets an honorable discharge in 1945. The court martial is a pretty big deal. Typically, you would get a dishonorable discharge, but she pulled off an honorable. So, it begs the question of what she was doing with these things like the honey trap, working for Holly Weird in the military propaganda films, so on and so forth. Now, the next phase of her life is important to note, that this is the part we get into Jack Parsons, which is going to be a lot. We're going to stay in this section for quite a bit, because Jack Parsons is very important to this argument. If you read my book, The Dark Path, you'll see the Jack Parsons, the author of the Antichrist Manifesto there. Thought he was the devil reincarnated here. He plays a huge role in this 20th and 21st century occultism, before he blew himself up. Now, she leaves the Navy in the mid-1940s. Moves to Pasadena, California, and crossed paths with Mr. John Whiteside Parsons at his mansion, which was called the Parsonage. She heard about this place, quote, "The fertility rites where naked women jumped through the flames of a fire set in the back garden." Because, of course, Jack Parsons was into all this sort of occult pagan ritual stuff. He was one of these renegade rocket scientists that established JPL, Jet Propulsion Labs. Some say it's supposed to be Jack Parsons Labs, but Jet Propulsion Labs, JPL, which was the predecessor to NASA. You already know this. Come on. I've talked about this many times. But, and if you don't, if you aren't familiar, just go back and listen to the last 200 episodes of the show. But he was in this renegade rocket scientist group called the Suicide Squad. Quite curious, given the dud of a film that hit a couple years ago with the Jared Leto Joker, who was in it for all of 2 minutes. Actually, I thought the movie was okay. Shouldn't have had Will Smith in it. He's such a cornball. Anyways, what is curious, though, is that these occultists, they follow Theosophy and Helena Blavatsky, and she asserted that man could become a superhero, a Superman, as it were, through the motivations and inspirations of otherworldly entities. So the Suicide Squad, comic book characters and comic book superheroes, they do have a connection with the occult, a very intimate connection. Was that name Suicide Squad motivated from Jack Parsons? I don't know. One could argue, if you listen to my recent show with Robert Sullivan, 32nd degree Freemason and author of Cinema Symbolism 1, 2, and 3, he talks about this idea that maybe these people don't really know these concepts, but on this sort of collective unconscious level, they're inspired without them knowing. And I think that may be what we have here. Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine, of course, envisioned the human race mutating into this new species of supernal beings, an evolutionary process that was predicted to begin in America. That's right, in America. And where does all this crazy shit happen? In America, of course. Manly P. Hall wrote The Secret Destiny of America. Same concept. It's this big trial, this big experiment. What happens when man gets free will? And now this whole idea makes me think of, in America, we've got like the genetically modified organisms, the GMOs that they ban in so many other countries. We can't even put it on the labels. We can't even wake people up to the idea that they're eating toxic food, the Frankenfoods. Isn't there something wrong with that? They won't put it on the label. There was a big battle where the big food industry fought against the government because the government wanted to label all foods that had GMOs in them to give their consumers fair warning they weren't eating real food. They were eating chemical, toxic, poison traps. And the food industry won, and now in America, we don't get that. Because you can't wake the sheep up in this big experiment. That's why we've got the entertainment industry in America. It is just like Rome with the bread and circus stuff. They have to control the message to control the people. That is why YouTube banned me. I had over 10 million views, 73,000 subscribers, something like that. This is all one big experiment to shape the mental and the physical to see what happens. Jack Parsons and his wife, Helen at the time, they went to the Theosophical Society meetings. Of course, this is Blavatsky stuff, right? But in the book, it says that he preferred Crowley's, quote, red-blooded pagan philosophy. There's another guy named Rudolf Steiner, who was also intrigued by the Theosophical Society until they named some Hindu guy a guru, and he started a sort of different occult path. But a lot of these occultists, they branch off from these base teachings and sort of add their little spin to it. But you can see Jack Parsons was inspired by the Theosophical Society, just like Rudolf Steiner did as well. Now, Jack Parsons made contact with L. Ron Hubbard. He, of course, is the founder of the Church of Scientology, wrote many science fiction books. And Jack thought that L. Ron Hubbard was a, quote, natural Thelemite based on his books. Thelemite, of course, is a reference to one who practices Aleister Crowley's religion of Thelema, which is a religion based off the axiom, do what thou wilt, which was dictated to him by a disembodied alien, a demon, the devil himself. I don't know. That's the story, though. A disembodied AWOS spirit, which later Crowley conflated AWOS with Lucifer. So, I don't know. That's the leap I make. Anyways, it was called Thelema. Jack Parsons was indeed a Thelemite for a period there, and thought L. Ron Hubbard should be as well. So Parsons was seeking LRH, that's L. Ron Hubbard, LRH, as a new magical partner, because his previous partner, Ed Foreman, had, quote, quit in terror, haunted by the specter of wailing banshees. So Jack hires LRH and they start the Babylon Workings. Now this is a very, this is probably one of the most interesting elements of this entire story. And we'll come back and kind of revisit parts here and there. But the Babylon Workings are a very curious magical ritual that happened. All, of course, in concert with Crowley's belief systems and contacting aliens, and they opened up the veil and the UFOs came through, and then Roswell happened, and oh, it was a real mess. But Jack and LRH, they worked the Babylon Workings with the first part of the ritual meant to provide an elemental, aka a scarlet woman. This is indeed a reference to the Whore of Babylon that you hear Crowley talk about. He had many women in his life, and each one was intended to be his scarlet woman to help him fulfill his will. So, anyways, they did the work, the Babylon Workings, the ritual. The first part was to provide an elemental in the scarlet woman that Jack himself could impregnate to create the Moon Child. This Moon Child was an earthly form of Babylon goddess of Thelema, who would take human form. Of course, the Moon Child is a book written by Crowley, a novel about warring magicians trying to create this offspring, this Rosemary's baby, as it were. So the first ritual set was completed, which actually arguably worked. Because guess who Jackie Boy met? Marjorie Cameron. Making him think that she could indeed and would be the vessel for the Babylonian goddess. Babylon goddess, sorry. different thing. Babylonian and Babylon. This is the Babylon goddess. Now Crowley, of course, when you search this thing, Crowley changed the name to Babylon, spelled B-A-B-A-L-O-N, from B-A-B-Y-L-O-N. He did this for numerological reasons. And of course, we'll unpack more on this Babylon working throughout this examination, but the numerology elements are, of course, important to these occultists. Goes back to Pythagoras and his first synthesis of various secret societies and mystery school teachings, and geometry and all these sort of ideas that these people are obsessed with. Now, in Crowley's world, Babylon is not a reference to Rome, which is what the mainstream people of today would believe that the Bible is talking about. No, no, no. Instead, Babylon is a sacred goddess of sex magic. And this Babylon working used Enochian language. What's Enochian language, you ask? Well, it was believed to be an ancient language in which Adam conversed with God himself and his angels, which died out with Enoch's passing. So Parsons and LRH were doing the Babylon workings using Enochian language to magically invoke this goddess. evoke, I believe, would be the correct term. Evoke. Evoke meaning external to the body, invoke internal. So Jack played the role of John Dee, the ancient astrologer and scryer. And LRH was the seer, Edward Kelly, who saw the astral plane. This goes back to the Queen Elizabeth, because she was into all this wacky stuff. And the idea was they were going to, quote, unleash Babylon's licentious spirit on a populace tyrannized by Christianity's strangulating attitude to sexuality, seen by Jack as the underlying root cause of psychological torment and societal bigotry, and set in motion the great beast's revolutionary new aeon. What is he saying here? He's saying that the new age, the aeon of Horus that Crowley wanted to usher in, was going to be further pushed along through this Babylon working. Because Christianity is the ultimate evil in the eyes of these occultists. Now, you can go back to Marjorie Cameron's upbringing and the Puritan punishment of sexuality to see how she was indeed drawn to this. How many people do you think this happens to? The Christian right, they do seem obsessed with controlling what goes on in the bedroom. And I question if it doesn't actually cause more harm than good with the approach that they take on this. Anyways, I don't want to get too far into the soapbox realm, but you can see that the puritanical sort of, I don't know, fascist controlling of what someone does in the bedroom, it draws some of these people like Parsons and Crowley and Cameron into the left-hand path, further away from God. I don't know, just a little food for thought. So one product of the first Babylon working ritual was a book called Liber 49, The Book of Babylon. This was the revelation dictated to Jack Parsons in the Mojave Desert, which he considered the denouement to the Book of the Law. Now, I looked this book up. The introduction to Liber 49 has a very interesting commentary on the modern times. And I will be reading this to you right now. Now, you have to keep in mind, I found this interesting because this was written in 1946. A note on the underlying philosophy. The present age is under the influence of the force called, in magical terminology, Horus. This force relates to fire, Mars, and the sun. That is, to power, violence, and energy. It also relates to a child being innocent, i.e. undifferentiated. Its manifestations may be noted in the destruction of old institutions and ideas, the discovery and liberation of new energies, and trend towards power governments, war, homosexuality, infantilism, and schizophrenia. Now, Liber 49 proceeds to tell of a haunted ritual invocation that had power going out, power in the house going out, and many storms outside brewing before the appearance of the goddess Babylon, who spoke to Jack the contents of the actual book. Babylon called it the fourth chapter in the Book of the Law. This culminated in February 1946, right after LRH went to run some errands or whatever, and in March, a month later, LRH returned. It had a very curious statement. And mind you that Parsons claimed he never told LRH that he had made this contact. Quote, on the night of March 2nd, he returned and described a vision he had that evening of a savage and beautiful woman riding naked on a great cat-like beast. Now, this, of course, is what we saw at the Super Bowl a few years ago with Katy Perry. She came out as the Whore of Babylon on the giant cat-like beast, riding atop it. This is, it's funny because after that, about a year, less than a year after that, was when Google started really clamping down on articles and websites like mine, and you'll notice that if you look up these sorts of topics, you'll generally find nonsense articles about symbolism of the Super Bowl and all that. Anyways, the Babylon working went on, and Parsons said in Liber 49 how he was forced to choose between madness and the oath of the abyss, which was an oath to fulfill the work of Aleister Crowley. He then wrote the Book of the Antichrist and Manifest of the Antichrist to end the, quote, lying hypocrisy of Christianity. So, to go back here, go back to that intro I read to Liber 49, you can see that they're very interested in getting rid of the old and bringing in the new. Which brings some very curious ideas, because, you know, they were concerned with, as you can read here, the trend towards power governments, war, homosexuality, and so on. And that's where I have a hard time with the occult realm, because I'm a bit more progressive than, you know, some other of my peers. I believe, so first off, we have to understand that change is constant. I took some courses in college on this concept, and I know the big liberal college filled my mind with all their liberal nonsense, but through observations over the years, I've found it to be very true. That man has to constantly change. You would be a robot if you never changed. In your life, it's a state of constant change. That is the only constant, is change. So to me, reform, change for the better, is what we need to pursue. And these occultists, that's of course what they want. Now, they say that the big problem is Christianity, and I don't know that I agree with that, being a Christian and all. But I do think some of the, you know, there's a lot of different Christian groups here in America, right? But the ones that get all the attention, the ones that seem to dominate the media, are the ones that are very sort of like bigoted and concerned where people put their genitalia and that sort of thing. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. But if you talk to people in your daily life that are not Christians, they say stuff like, well, I'm spiritual. I don't need religion to tell me what to think and do. And I get that sentiment. I really do. I get that. But the point I'm making here is that I think the big concept here is to trick people into thinking that Christianity has less spiritualism than they let on. In fact, if you read a lot of these occultists, they, you know, it seems like a lot of them are, they believe that the organized group of Christianity is the big problem in the world, especially with like the Roman Catholic Church. So, but some of them, you've got like Christian Kabbalism. You've got these groups that see there is a sort of more ethereal spiritual message behind Jesus Christ's teachings. But I think people get lost in the minutia of, I don't know, gay marriage or whatever. Fill in the blank. Anyways. Oh boy, I'm getting on the soapbox a lot here. Let's keep it moving. Babylon Workings. Jack wrote a book, Liber 49. Then Jack was inspired to pursue the Babylon working after reading The Vision and the Voice, which was a book written by Aleister Crowley talking about his astral journey through the Enochian Aries. Aries, of course, meaning heavens. Now, because there's two parts to the ritual, the Babylon working ritual, of course, right? So you've got the second part. This is where we get into the Babylon short-lived evocation of Cameron. John D. Edward Kelly, back in their old-timey ages, they were instructed by an angel named Uriel, to swap wives. That's right. They were doing a little bit of the old devil's triangle themselves. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a drinking game, isn't it? But they were swapping wives because the angel told them to. And that actually destroyed their relationship, which ironically would be how LRH and Parsons would end up swapping lives. How curious is that? Because, like I mentioned earlier, Parsons and LRH were taking on the roles of John Dee and Edward Kelly using the Enochian language to make contact with the other side. And they end up piercing the veil of each other's wives. So, Marjorie's her magical name given to her. Because at this point, she was hooked up with Jack. Because they evoked the spirit. And Cameron met Parsons. And Parsons believed her to be the Scarlet Woman that he was to procreate with and make the Moon Child. Spoiler alert, it didn't happen. But her magical name given to her by Jack was Candida. So she went by the name Candy. Now, LRH and Jack had a falling out. Crowley was dissatisfied with the whole situation and was upset about Jack's financials involved with it. So Marjorie Cameron wanted to go visit Aleister Crowley in England to offer up his side of the story. But guess what? She never made it. Crowley died in 1947. Wait. Yeah. 1947. December 1st, Aleister Crowley died. So she didn't make it. So he died apparently not too thrilled with Jack Parsons' situation. So now, 1947, you have to understand what was going on is the U.S. government was paranoid. They were paranoid of the Red Scare during the, this is the beginning of the Cold War and communism. So Jack Parsons was investigated because he had these liberal communist sort of tendencies. And he had actually been to some communist meetings. And he did have interest because of the rise of fascism in Europe and saw communism as a battle against fascism. Now, one could argue there's that these political economic philosophies or whatever they want to call them, it's just one big circle, and fascism is very close to communism. But anyways, so he was more on the side of communism, and his membership into Crowley's Church of Thelema was investigated. Now, this investigation led Jack to believe that, of course, the Judeo-Christian system was to blame. He thought that it promoted racism, subjugation of women, and opposed free thought. I don't know that he's entirely wrong with all of those things, looking at the history. Again, but I think it's because, man is fallible. Man becomes in charge of these churches, and they lose sight of the big picture of what Christ came in here to do. Anyways, so this led to the Manifesto of the Antichrist, the writing, the book that opposed the Black Brotherhood. That's the term Crowley had for the Christian church. So Cameron and Jack, they started growing apart, but their magical partnership stayed, and she actually developed catalepsy, a form of epilepsy, and Jack, quote, wondered if it was a side effect of the surreptitious magical workings he had performed with her. Now, we've talked about this many times in the past, the dangers of approaching this dark realm of the abyss. Crowley warned about it, approaching Coron Zone, and apparently Jack Parsons was worried that Cameron had a similar danger involved here. So Parsons, I had a flow here. Some of this stuff is actually just interesting little factoids. But I've got this one highlighted here because this one's very curious. Jack Parsons, he saw tarot cards as a way to illuminate one's travel on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And the aim is to, quote, bring sexual union of male and female aspects of God through sacred deeds and ritualistic actions to actualize God so that he may rain his grace upon the adept and the world. So many things going on there. We talk about the sexual union of male and female. Of course, we talk about the Baphomet, the goat with the boobs, which will make a feature in the Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix, which I completed and will be doing an analysis on. The, you know, Whitley Strieber, he wrote a little mini book called Pain. It talks about these ideas and principles of sex and death. And this leads us back into a conversation of what we talked about earlier with the church shaming sex. Is it based upon this idea of the occultists doing their alchemical reconciliation of opposites? Was that their concern? It wasn't so much, you know, sex being a problem. It was maybe the occult practices that they're talking about. I don't know. So Jack described Babylon as the spiritual Armageddon that would destroy the monotheistic gods, fulfilling his manifesto of the Antichrist, destroying the lying hypocrisy of Christian churches. Now, Jack believed that the Babylon workings were successful, and Babylon was, quote, nesting somewhere on earth in a human host. The Enochian rituals were used to impress the Babylon gods, and Jack believed the rituals had danger in them, and he had suffered some astral attacks because he did them. He saw Aleister Crowley's death as one such example, and he became worried that he would be killed. So he passed the Babylon responsibilities over to Marjorie Cameron by showing her the rituals, and she and said that the Babylon was the, quote, great work that linked them together. He said that on the day of Babylon's manifestation, he would be, quote, blown away. Now, isn't that curious? Because he would indeed get blown away, dying in an explosion. So here, the point here also is that Jack indoctrinated Marjorie Cameron to believe that they had a great work together. This is coded language because the great work is what the Freemasons pursue. It's the idea that there is a higher calling for them. Now, after the rituals, this is the behind the music of Jack Parsons' life. After the rituals, Parsons and Aleister Crowley, they were indeed the predecessors of the upcoming rock and roll movement. Again, let me rewind a bit. The purpose here, Parsons and Crowley, they thought they could create this new environment, this new breeding ground for the Aeon of Horus, the new age. And of course, the rock and roll movement happened right after they were doing all of these efforts to do such a thing. They were pushing the sex, drugs, and rock and roll before people knew what that was. The society would change, of course. Racial, sexual improvements in society. Pagan archetypes became commonplace. Marilyn Monroe, she was the Aphrodite for the Atomic Age. James Dean, he was the Luciferian rebel. And Elvis, who was the Dionysian mixture of gospel and sexual hip gyrations. And I think it's very curious. I think a lot of the ideas that they wanted to pursue not only became accepted, but normalized. Now, L. Ron Hubbard, he wrote Dianetics. And it turned out it was a more popular route to self-realization than Aleister Crowley's Thelema. And this bothered Marjorie Cameron because she thought that LRH took some ideas from Jack Parsons, including some of the initiation ideas from the Ordo Templi Orientis, the magical ritual order that Crowley and Parsons and all their little buddies were into. So apparently Scientology does have some initiation rites, just like the OTO. And you know, I always talk about Charles Manson because, well, why not, right? But they say that Charles Manson was an OT, not an OG. He was an OT. That's an operating theta. It's a high level in the Church of Scientology. Apparently he had learned a bunch of this stuff while in prison from a Scientologist. And OT levels are only reserved for people like Jesus Christ. Supposedly, he was an OT. I don't know. Don't ask me. But so Manson apparently had some Scientology connections too, and of course he had all these weird sort of, I don't know that he was practicing magic, but there were 6 degrees of separation between him and Crowley and all that stuff as well. But let's not get into that. Crowley thought that L. Ron Hubbard was merely a trickster. So apparently Crowley wasn't a big fan of Parsons and LRH. He said LRH started the religion because he thought it was a great idea. He said, quote, because that's where the money is. He's not entirely wrong, is he? So Jack Parsons, here's where he will make a departure from the story. Him and Cameron were supposed to go on vacation, but at the time, Jack Parsons was having problems finding work. But a special effects corporation there in Hollywood, they wanted him to provide some explosives for a movie. And Jack thought he could hurry up and do it before they went on vacation. Until he dropped a mixture and it exploded. Oops. So, I don't want to lie. It's not funny. Too soon. But Jack's mother, this is really weird. Jack Parsons' mom, Ruth, she heard the news, swallowed an entire bottle of sedatives, and died. Now, what's even more disturbing is that she had a friend who was an invalid living with her, so she couldn't speak, and she could only watch as it happened. How disturbing is that? Now, the side effects of messing with all this stuff, of course, you know, Jack died, his mother committed suicide, Cameron developed catalepsy. I don't know, man. I mean, it's a dangerous path to take. That would, you know, that'd be my warning for those of you that are into this kind of thing. But what do I know? So they had a closed casket funeral, and nobody officially identified Jack Parsons. And some people believed that maybe he didn't die. Maybe that wasn't him. And of course, there's a lot of theories about that stuff. But Jack Parsons left behind a black box with magical manuscripts, and it had a note that said, "Don't go further or you'll lose your life on the top." Now, in this book, this box would be lugged around by Cameron, and we'll talk about it later as well. But a man named George Fry was in possession of the box at a certain point, and he did attempt to open it. And guess what? There was a hinge that cut his hand and left a scar. Oh my God. Terrifying. All right, that's the end of the first part of the Marjorie Cameron analysis. I'll be recording and releasing the remaining sessions where we'll get in further down the spiral with Marjorie Cameron's life and see where it takes her and see the influences she has on the entertainment world and the occult symbolism that we've been exploring so often. I want to thank you for listening, and as always, be your best for those who deserve your best.